Welcome to the Minivate Gang Podcast, episode 165. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
Graham Thickens.
Hey, I don't have my pajamas on for this one. I'm actually dressed.
Excellent. Phil Wilson.
I'm glad you finished that thought. Good morning.
So, Phil, do you have your pajamas on? That's the...
No.
Okay.
Buck naked.
Oh, jeez.
Oh.
All right.
It's going to be one of those podcasts.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to hear that. So I'm desperate to know how the Windows Phone event went. Who went to that? I'm desperate.
You got to get out more, dude.
Yeah, I know. Tell me about it.
It was only at Eden Prairie, too.
I know.
It's right around the corner.
It couldn't have been closer to you.
Yeah. And it was the first one in the country of the whole roadshow tour they're doing.
All right, five hours in my dentist chair having a split tooth worked on was not my idea of a good time, and I was not a happy guy at that night. So, plus I had to go pick up my wife at the airport, so there's just that's my excuse, and I'm sticking to it, so leave me alone.
Well, you didn't win a phone at least Phil did.
Yeah, what's up with that? You won a phone, huh?
It was, I never win anything. How many people say that? But it was really very nice. We got there and I was kind of standing around waiting for the thing to start. And as they sort of kicked off the event, they started giving away prizes. And I won the first Lumia 900 phone. So
sweet.
It was very nice. I don't know how Tim feels about it, but after the event, I was very enamored with the phone. I think it's a nice phone. I really enjoy the operating system. I really like be able to use this, but I'm not on AT&T, so.
But did you keep it? Or do you have it?
Yeah, it's still sitting here. Yeah.
Will it blend?
Probably.
Good one, Steve.
for those of you who are listening, don't know the Will It Blend series, where the guy grinds everything up in his blender. Anyway, the CEO of the company.
Yeah, it was free.
He blend tech. Yeah.
No way. This is a nice phone. I really like it, but I can't use it. So I don't know. What should I do with it, guys? You tell me.
Sell it, baby. No,
Craigslist.
They were giving each of us as we came in a $50 off coupon for that night only. But up until the 21st, which is today, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you buy one, you can get a $100 rebate from AT&T, so you essentially get it for free.
Essentially, they pay you $50 for it.
Well, if you use the Best Buy coupon, which can't be used anymore, but that night, we could have made $50. I was too tired and went home, though. I lost interest.
So tell me about the event, though. How was it?
I wanted to ask Phil and Tim a question about that. I arrived 15 minutes into the presentation. I thought it was more like a blogger press event.
No.
Like just a consumer event.
It's just wide open to people with invitations. I'm not sure exactly where they got their list, but it was really kind of targeted towards early adopters and tech folks.
Yeah. So. Well, I got mine from a PR agency, so that's why I assumed it was a press event, but apparently they went much broader than that.
But I really enjoyed it. It was a longer event than I thought it would be. A lot of the times those events are sort of drift in, drift out sort of things, but they had the evening well planned out, and basically all the participants went from station to station, spent 20 minutes emphasizing different features of the phone or different uses of the phone. And I thought the concept was really well thought out and well engineered. It was the first event, though, so obviously they had sound problems. They started late. It was interesting. Mm.
I was curious to see whether they were going to shut the store down. I didn't figure they did, but it didn't draw that many people that they needed to shut it down.
Yeah, there were hardly any people in the store.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, well, hey, don't bring up a sensitive point.
We had plenty of room. Yeah.
Space was not an issue.
I was sitting there. One of the stations was near the back of the store where, the storeroom is. Later in the evening, they started restocking the store. I kept thinking to myself, what the hell are they restocking?
What did they sell?
What did they sell?
But yeah, they kind of hit, well, they probably hit about, what, 50, 60 people at the event, would you say? Or
something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I noticed shoppers were drifting in from time to time. And,
well, that's not too bad.
Yeah. It was good, a good thing to have it in the store for Best Buy, obviously. And I'm sure they sold some phones that night.
I don't know, though.
I could tell you.
It was, it just didn't seem like it.
Yeah, I really couldn't tell you if they sold any phones or not, but they gave away a lot of stuff. Tim won.
Yeah, right. I got 4,000 Microsoft points.
Microsoft Live points. So what does that mean? Xbox
points.
Yeah. What does that mean?
It means I'll be watching. It's like $50 worth of points, so I'll just be watching a lot of movies, I guess.
I gotcha.
But I thought the phone was really nice hardware, but the software still is half baked.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's things like this, the horizontal position where they got landscape mode, keyboard, not filling the screen up. I mean, this stuff like that just seemed, I don't know, just seemed like it wasn't ready.
Well, and there was more than that not ready, because the main reason I went was to see the, Flip Toast app from W3i, which is one of the featured apps supposedly of the launch. And there were some bugs in getting that ready, apparently, because we couldn't find it, right, Tim? You tried to find it. You searched and everything. So I don't know what the deal was on that. But again, this was the first event in the country, and they're just getting their act together, I guess.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I'm not sure why they picked Minneapolis as the first event, other than just Best Buy's hometown. But
that's probably why. But
but it was clearly Microsoft employees were running the show.
Well, and the fact that the W3i had got the first social app to be featured in the platform was pretty cool too. But
well, so far it hasn't been featured in the platform. So
So there's some bug going on there. They told me that there was something not quite right. But the app is being used, because they're getting all kinds of mentions on Twitter. If you go look at the Flip Toast hashtag, people are. It's a viral thing. Whenever you do something on Flip Toast, it hits the Twitter hashtag, I guess. So, they're getting a ton. I thought Andy Johnson told me earlier that evening at the Ovative Group open house that they had something like 750,000 downloads already or something.
That's pretty encouraging.
Yeah, it was a big number. It was approaching, a million at that time.
Were most of those on the desktop, though? Or are they on mobile?
Well, phone? He might have been quoting a total figure there. Yeah, that might be true. It must be,
Well, I was also bummed to miss the Ovative Group open house. And Ovative Group, for those that don't know, is a trio of executives and venture capitalists, Kim Gerritsen, who formed a group that is a, how would you describe it? It's a high-level management consulting.
Yeah, group. And primarily for digital media and retail businesses.
Right.
But actually, I was hoping to learn more about what they're doing, but they never really did anything, and I didn't get a chance to corner Kim and ask him more about, So what are you guys doing? But hey, when you mentioned it was a trio, it's now 20 people.
So, well, I know they get, there's three core
guys that founded it. But they have, but the point is, I don't think most people realize they've grown as much as they have, and that was the main purpose of the event, I think, to just to kind of brag and show off their new space. They moved into the old Jamf software space in the Open Book building, because Jamf, of course, has been growing like mad and needed larger space, so they're on the third floor there, and a ton of people showed up. I mean, they invited everybody they knew, so it was darn near shoulder to shoulder in there.
Well, I did send Kim a direct message on Twitter that I couldn't make it and why, and he didn't get back to me.
Oh, he's a little bit.
I can't imagine why.
I'm just kidding.
I can't imagine why.
But the wine was flowing. They had great hors d'oeuvres and lots of great conversations going on. And but I, you know, I bailed before it ended by probably an hour before it ended to go out to Best Buy.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Yeah, but there were a lot of folks we know that were there, and a few people from Best Buy, at least one of whom I knew. And so we commiserated a little bit about that situation, which I know you guys probably don't want to bore our listeners with more Best Buy. And I won't identify who this person was, but... But, you know, it's obviously people are in a wait and see mode, and the people there are not the happiest about the situation, as you can imagine. And I guess the 400 corporate employees that were announced to be cut all know now, and most or all are gone. That I found out, not surprising. But we don't want to dwell on those things. I don't think so.
No.
You want me to tell you who else I ran into?
Oh, okay.
Jim Bernard from the Tribune.
The Strib, yeah.
Yeah, we had a nice chat, the senior VP of digital, and I didn't ask him a lot of questions, but, you know, I was running into everybody. John Roberts was there, and Dan Olson from the Star Collaborative, the Best Buy, original Best Buy guys that went off to do their own thing with contract, you know, they place contractors of various types at Best Buy and other local businesses. And I'm trying to think of who else was there. Oh, I said hello to Dale Nischke, one of the co-founders of Ovative. He's the former Target.com. He was head of the whole thing, wasn't he? Went before they started Ovative Group.
Well, he was in the management team. I don't know if he led it.
I think he was like president or something like that.
Okay. Okay.
But anyway, he obviously was there, and it was a good event. I only stayed about an hour and a half at the most, and had some good conversations. So congratulations to them for moving into their new space. And and one other little piece of information I picked up from Kim. I says, where's Bart Davis? He was one of their recent hires not more than a year ago. He's a guy that I knew from many years ago and Kim has worked with. And he said, oh, didn't you hear? He went to U.S. Bank. And I go, what? And he goes, yeah, as VP of mobile.
Huh.
And I go, what? And he goes, yeah, he got recruited. Some recruiter pulled him into the deal. And it's a very significant position. And I said, well, how long has he been gone? He goes, a couple months. So. Wow. So that was a little piece of news that I hadn't picked up on.
Is there a kid on your floor playing with Matchbox cars or something?
No, that's my wife playing on the countertop. I'll mute here and
okay. Let you well, talk. But you know what? Let's shift a little bit, because one of the things that you put in the show notes to talk about today, I haven't seen this question, is Kickstarter the new VC? And for those that are listening, Kickstarter, of course, is the crowdsourced funding operation for people with great ideas, and the one that is just absolutely leaping forward is this Pebble, the watch,
Dick Tracy watch.
Oh, I got to tell you that it is what an absolutely brilliant strategy. And of course, they tried to raise $100,000; they've raised over $5 million so far.
Yeah, it's almost six.
Yeah. Almost six. Just absolutely.
I got some of my money.
Just absolutely incredible. Well, I mean, really seriously, when you think about the fact that there's no better way to vet an idea than to flesh it out and put this up there and see if anybody cares. There were some guys that did a Skype phone that, you know, was something you could set on the countertop and all of that, and it would be $250, and they had to raise $7 million, and they raised like $20,000. So it's like, the market spoke.
There's been a lot of bombs on Kickstarter.
Yeah, yeah. But when you look at something like this, not only is it a fabulous little device, but they're turning it into a platform and all of that. But it's what a great way to get market validation before you go off and build something.
Oh, absolutely. But it does seem to be biased, obviously, towards hardware gadgets, you know, as opposed to software.
Right.
I have yet to find somebody, please tell me if they know, is there a good software or app project or product, I should say, that's been launched on Kickstarter?
I've not seen one.
It's primarily a platform for projects for creative and cause-related things. In other words, you don't have to be a business to anybody can put anything up there. Most companies if they're serious, like this one certainly is, are already a business, or they're going to create an LLC when they launch their project. It wasn't really started as a startup oriented kind of a thing. It was more for just cool ideas, creative ideas, and quote unquote projects.
Yeah, and little accessories and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like the iPod Nano wristwatch started, you know, on a Kickstarter project.
Okay, that's where that thing started.
Yeah, so there's stuff like that's, you know, it's kind of small scale. This is the first one that's really been kind of a, you know, it's a $150 gadget that looks like it makes a lot of sense.
Well, so one thing that, you know, you asked the question, I just went to Kickstarter while you were asking the question, Graham, about has there been anything software related? And even though this is not technically just a piece of software or an app or anything, but there's a video game called Wasteland 2.
Okay, games.
Almost 3 million. They tried to raise 900K and they raised 3 million.
Okay, 61,000 backers. So. I guess that doesn't surprise me. Games is a hot category. I'm thinking of non-game apps and stuff. And there probably have been plenty that have been attempted. It's just a question of how many have been successful, you know. And I suppose you can go on there and search and find stuff like that. But I just haven't had time to do it.
Yeah.
There's another site that's similar that the local guys at DealPen like better, and it's called Indiegogo. Have you guys been on that one yet?
Nope.
Yeah, well, they like it better for a number of reasons, but it doesn't have anywhere near the visibility and awareness of Kickstarter. I mean, Kickstarter has got the name recognition. There's also another one called Rocket something. But it's pretty ugly. So
Steve, you're on Kickstarter right now, right?
Yes.
And I looked under the most funded tab.
Yep.
And how come I'm not seeing, Pebble?
Maybe because it's still open. It hasn't been actually funded yet.
Oh, I got you. That's right. Yeah. 18th of May is their deadline, right?
Yep.
Yeah. They're still raising money.
I got you. Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Well, and it was interesting because in this morning's paper, there was an article by Wendy Lee in the Strib about lean times for venture capital. You know, Dan Carr from the Collaborative ran that VC panel, and it was really focused on the hottest category of venture capital in Minnesota, which is medical devices and medical device startups, and how it's been pretty tough and there's a tough road ahead for these startups.
It was mainly whining about how bad things are in medtech, but you know what? That's a positive for the internet software.
Right.
IT.
It is.
Part of town here.
It
because
is.
Finally, the VCs are less focused on medtech. They were outrageously focused on it, you know, overwhelmingly for years. And now, you know, it's good to see people like Michael Gorman and Jeff Hink at El Dorado funding internet plays.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I say, hooray, hooray. As much as I like medical advances, you know, let's have some more money flowing to internet and IT and mobile.
What's interesting is that Kickstarter has a lot of artists, you know, like plays and performers and stuff. So this would be interesting if you're like an indie, you know, singer or whatever. be an interesting way to raise money and see where fans are so you can plan a tour.
Yep.
Well, not only plan it, but finance it too.
Well, there were a couple of guys that one of whom I met at when I presented at the Apple Uptown store did a business or a small business oriented presentation. And there were eight people that came to it because we had a blizzard that day. But one of the guys that was there had actually, with his partner, had done a Kickstarter for their documentary film.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And they'd raised, at that point, they'd raised half. I think they were looking for $300,000, and they'd raised half the money.
Huh. This was a long time ago, too, right? This was like a year or more ago, probably.
Yeah, and I just sort of lost touch with it. I'll see if I can find it. But yeah, they'd raised half the funds. And so, you know, I mean, so it doesn't have to just be technology. To your point, Tim, it can be anything.
Well, well, like I say, and that's really the vein in which it was started. By the way, I remember the difference with Indiegogo. You get everything you raise, even if you don't reach your target. So that's the key difference with Indiegogo as opposed to Kickstarter. If you state a target on Kickstarter and don't reach it, you get nothing. Zero.
Yeah.
And the people don't get charged either.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly.
True. Yep. Which is probably why it's taken off more. And I guess I don't know if Indiegogo will get a lot of traction or not. But we'll see.
Well, listen, this is funny because when my wife and I were living in Chicago, we came up with a line of kids' luggage called Teddy. No, I can't remember the name of the line. Teddy Time was one of the characters on one of the bags, and we had prototypes made, and we went to a couple of different manufacturers, and basically they all turned us down, and we went after it for about a year. And if something like Kickstarter had existed at that point, I mean, it could have totally changed the ability to get funded and the ability to get the product made and get into distribution.
You could have been a luggage mogul by now. Could have been. My God. You could have joined my
luggage mogul. We could call him Samsonite.
You could have joined my friends at eBags in Denver. Those guys rock the luggage world, the internet play that came out of the 90s. Did you ever meet those guys, Steve?
No.
Oh, they're great guys. You would. Yeah, it's too bad you weren't hooked up with them back then. Well, but anyway.
Yeah, well, we were pretty naive. We were like 31 years old. And anyway. What are you going to do? Yeah, well,
crowdfunding though is a hot topic for sure, and we're just going to keep hearing more and more about it.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, our only oddball idea is going to go up on Kickstarter though, because if you've got a really good idea, would you risk, you know, putting the idea up there? I mean, I'm kind of surprised at Pebble, because that seems to be to me like a really good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're not a new business. They've been around. They got their chops in the BlackBerry world. Did you read about that?
Right.
Yeah. They're still selling it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So they're hardly a new company, and but you're right. They're not the typical Kickstarter project at all. And does it portend more real businesses getting on Kickstarter and launching a project? I'm working with a startup that's been noodling on it, but you know, they've already raised close to $500,000, and do they, you know, they don't really see it as a serious fundraising thing. They see it as a way to test their concepts with consumers and to test whether a certain kind of project has appeal. And they don't really see it as a way they'd really get much money. And they're hardly going to stop their normal fundraising efforts because of Kickstarter. But I think you're right, Tim. It's probably going to cause more significant companies that have some backing and have some product abilities to go on to Kickstarter to at least test things. And you know, really think about what they're getting. They're getting $6 million they're close to now for giving up zero equity.
Right.
Right. And they're going to get like 50,000 orders for their product.
It is it's a buzz, you know, machine for the people that can get so lucky. So it's a way of buying buzz, or not buying it, orchestrating it, you know, and for the lucky ones that catch fire, you know, it's worth a ton of money. It's cheap money and it's huge publicity, because every tech blog from here to Kingdom Come is writing about it, you know. So good for them. And I want one for sure.
Well, but if you just go into, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the technology area of funded projects on Kickstarter, there's some really clever things that have appeared that, again, you know, if you walked by at a shelf at Best Buy or Micro Center or something, you might not pay any attention to it unless you were specifically looking for something. But, I mean, there's this cloud FTP, wirelessly share any USB storage with iPad and iPhone. It's just a little box.
Yeah.
You know, and you plug it in and you have a hard drive full of media and you're dancing.
Yep.
So there's just little stuff like that that you think, well, I mean, is this really something that a big company would make? And the answer is no, except there's already products out there like it. But, you know, clearly people are perceiving a need and they can get the thing funded quickly and get it to market.
Well, and I think tinkerers, you know, geeks like this stuff, and they think, oh, this is cool. I want to play with this. So they're happy to chip in a little bit of money just for a chance to be the first one to get their hands on it.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on here. It's well followed by the geeks, I think, and particularly the hardware gadget type geeks. But there's a ton of them, you know, the tinkerers.
Yeah, like this print bot. Have you seen this thing?
Yeah.
3D printer. That's crazy.
Huh. Yeah. There's some, it's really taken fire, this whole Kickstarter concept.
Yeah. Well, let's.
So, Tim, did you invest in the watch?
No, I have not.
Really?
I'm the only one that's given money?
I guess so.
Okay. Well, hopefully this thing isn't butt ugly when I get it.
Oh, no.
Did you get the red one?
I got they got the black one. But the question I have is what made me start thinking about this, and maybe we can go off on a tangent here. I don't know if you guys want to follow me or not. But as I thought about, you know, picking up this watch, which basically connects to your smartphone via Bluetooth, I'm thinking, well, that's a kind of a cool idea. It kind of gives you that extension of your phone while it's in your pocket. But then I thought, you know, I already have issues with battery life on my phone as it is. And here's one more thing that's going to be there 24/7, or ideally to work, it's got to be hooked in 24/7. That's going to put yet another drain on your battery. So
yes, it is.
It started me thinking about, okay, so we hear a lot about broadband. We hear a lot about shortages of broadband. You know, how is all this new technology going to impact our battery life? You know, and how much of it becomes necessary, and what things do you start cutting out in order to make your batteries last longer?
Well, you know, there's already, I've done the same thing where I've already gone and begun to selectively turn off certain things, you know, certain location apps, and there's certain apps that I won't leave running in the background because I know that they just suck battery dry. Like I had the Nike app when I was out exercising, and I had the Voxer app, and I had Skype open simultaneously. And in 1 hour, I went from 100% to 72%. And it was like, oops. Probably should have shut some of those off.
Which is really, really good battery life compared to my Evo.
Is it? Oh, geez.
Yep. Yeah.
But to your point, that's exactly what's going on. But also, you know, in a bizarre sort of twist of events, that's why Elon Musk with Tesla Motors specifically went after batteries that were an array of essentially laptop batteries because of what was happening in the consumer space, that, you know, millions and tens of millions of these devices means that there's millions and millions of people around the world that have incredible pent up demand for longer battery life.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of money at stake. And so there's a lot of people chasing extended battery life. And that's what they were counting on when they were using them in the cars. And I really honestly believe that this is going to continue. We're going to start continue to see more and more releases of stuff like this IBM technology that, you know, could potentially increase by 500 times the amount of storage for battery and things of that nature. So,
well, there's lots of research going into and discussion about battery life. I put together a post not too long ago about, some of the things that are happening right now. For example, $20 million is funding the launch up of a battery research hub from the Department of Energy. There's a great deal of gatherings and conferences being put together where people are coming together to try to come up with, you know, ways to extend battery life, and of course research into all sorts of things to increase battery life. So, you know, one of the other things that a lot of people don't think about is also the advancement in technology that is leading to better use of that battery life by the electronics behind it. I mean, we've gone from multiple chips running inside a device to one chip running multiple features. So it's a lot more efficient. It'll get taken care of, I'm sure, but it's still everything you do gets slapped onto that battery.
Well, so the one advantage to technology marching forward is Bluetooth 4.0. And so Bluetooth 4.0 is BLE, Bluetooth Low Energy, which is a big feature of this next version of Bluetooth. And also it's going to have greater range, greater penetrating capability, supposedly through walls and so forth. And in theory, you know, the whole near field communication where you can sort of get close to something and buy it or have it tell you something on your phone has been something that hasn't really been implemented, because I think everybody's been waiting for Bluetooth 4 and having it built into smartphones. And, in theory, a lot of us will be able to turn Wi-Fi off and just use Bluetooth 4 for connection to the Pebble watch or connection to our cars. You know, things like that, and it won't suck battery as much. So I think there's a lot of different strategies like this going on, and hopefully that'll help this whole power consumption issue.
Oh yeah, the chip advances, and aren't there more and more of these add-on things that are getting slimmer and slimmer too? I mean, every gadget freak I know, like Julio, has got all these add-on battery things. Do you do that, Steve, where you have
have a Mophie juice pack, but I broke it. So
how do you break it?
How did you break it?
Well, so I dropped my phone and it landed right on the corner where the connector is, and it cracked open the case, and then it also bent the input in there, so I could kind of get my cable in there. So I was kind of moving it around in there, and all of a sudden I heard this little sound. And I broke off the
connector.
Which
is never good.
It's never, never good. So
those little pfts are never good.
Never. Yeah. And then all the power leaked out.
Then all the power leaked out. The power leaked out. That's right.
There was power everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah.
So. All over the street. Well, you know, every time I'm traveling in my car, I just plug in my phone in my car thing, you know, and I never have problems with battery life, really.
Well, so the new iPad 3, not only does the battery suck pretty
good. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. But I put it into personal hotspot mode so I could connect my MacBook Air up, because I had to do some work of sitting in a parking lot. And it was just like you could just watch the percentage drop. It's just like, doot, 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 doot. It's like, whoa, 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 slow down here.
You got limited time, buddy.
Yeah.
You get done.
Oh, so. My gosh.
If the next iPhone has LTE, they're going to have to make it bigger just to put a bigger battery in it.
I would think. Well, unless they've got some magic in the wings that we don't know about.
I don't know.
And all we're hearing about is the downsized iPad, the rumors about the 7-inch iPad, but, you know, that won't have much battery either because it's smaller, right?
Really, I have not heard a word about a 7-inch iPad.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's a boomer. I don't think that we're going to see one, though.
Yeah, I think it'll be an 8.2-inch. No, I don't know.
Yeah. Also, I think I've heard about is the 5, you know, the iPhone 5. So that's That, yeah. And, you know, that in lawsuits, yeah, for my apps.
The iPad will be the same size. I mean, the iPad is the iPad. It will not change in size.
Yeah.
They may put higher resolution monitor, you know, screens in it, but the size is the size.
I know we're talking about size here a little bit. I just, when we were at that Lumia event, Tim, I noticed, and I didn't get a chance to get over there to play with one. Have you played with one of the Galaxy Notes at all?
I have.
Seems pointless to me. I don't know. But then again, I was the guy that said, do you really need anything between a phone and a laptop? And, well, the iPad has proved me a moron. So
I think the only way that the Note makes sense is if it is your phone as well. So the 5-inch one,
yeah.
If you can stand a 5-inch phone, which I just have problems with, you know, anything over 4 inches, this is too large. Like the Lumia 900, it seemed too large for me. Mm-hmm. I would prefer a slightly smaller screen. But if you're going to replace your phone and you wanted some, you know, like tablet-like features, like it has that pen and so forth, so you can draw pictures and stuff, then the Note's an interesting idea. And they're going to do a whole line of them. I think they're going to have an 11-inch one too.
It all comes down to how big your hands are, right? With the phone that you're comfortable with. And
yeah,
some people that have really long fingers or big hands might like those bigger ones. But
yeah. That is one of the reasons that I got the Evo, honestly, because it is a little bit larger phone. And I have long hands, being, you know, 6'5", my hands are long. And
that's right. Everything is proportional. That's right.
Anyway, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a matter of what fits comfortably in your hand and where can your thumbs and fingers reach with one hand and that sort of a thing. So, but I still, you know, when I look at the Note, I think, geez, I remember when I had my PDA and mm-hmm. I was really glad to get rid of it because I was tired of losing styluses and things like that.
Yeah.
But
you don't have to use it. It's a capacitive screen.
I know.
So you can use it with your finger if you want.
I know. But I'm not seeing the need for it.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. I bought an Adonit Jot stylus, which is the one with that little plastic disc on the end. And I'm actually now using it to take notes in an app called Notability. And it works phenomenally well. But to your point, it's like, where's my stylus?
Where's the stylus?
Oh, I left it in my other briefcase, you know.
And how much does that stylus cost?
$30.
$30.
Someone is going to have to bring back graffiti as like a retro thing so you can run it on your iPhone.
Oh gosh, I'd forgotten about
graffiti.
Wouldn't that be cool?
It was. Yeah, well, it actually worked in Newton 2.0.
Oh, I know. I use it on my Newton.
Yeah.
All the time. That was how I input text into it. I mean, mm-hmm. It was the only way. And that was before Palm even, you know.
Right, right.
So they started out to be this software company. So it would be kind of funny if, you know, HP, someone bought from HP the assets of the graffiti code and this brought it back as an iPhone and Android app, just as sort of a nostalgia play. You know, wouldn't that be cool? You have your little stylus. I could remember how to do it too.
I don't know if I could remember.
Can a full Palm emulator be far behind?
Well, good
question. It may actually be out there. Who knows?
Tim?
Yeah?
Graffiti for Android available in the App Brain market.
You're kidding. Nope. Oh, that is cool. I wonder how much it is.
It's got malware in it.
It's free.
I'm kidding.
It's free.
Well, I had put something in here for us to talk about in our gang mentality segment that kind of dovetails into all this mobile discussion that we're having.
And your fear of being stalked by Big Brother.
Yeah. And, you know, I think people are just getting weary of it. And it's almost like crying wolf in a lot of ways. But an article that was in Technology Review, the MIT publication, if you have a smartphone, anyone can now track your every move.
Just before we go any further on that, do you keep a copy of that in the bathroom?
Is that where you,
the MIT review?
No.
No, oh, okay. I'm just kind of curious.
No,
MIT review.
Hey, I know the editor, Jason Ponton. He's a great guy. It's a good, good
yeah, so there, Phil.
Okay.
Yeah. Watch but, out what you say about MIT.
But this article has been making the rounds on Twitter and Google Plus and stuff, and it was on Tech Meme as well. But basically what it is, this company Navizon has the ability to track movements through Wi-Fi triangulation inside of buildings and trade shows and, you know, Mall of America kind of thing. And they point out in the article that the good news is essentially is that, you know, it's anonymous. They don't know who you are. Except, though, that what's interesting is because they can identify the device, if, in fact, they do what we used to do at Vignette, which was allow a user to be anonymous, and you would ask them specific data points, like what's your zip code? And then later on in the visit, you'd ask some other innocuous piece of data. And eventually, if you could convert that user to a registered one, then you'd have all this data about them, right? Well, it's the same thing with this. If you expose your name or anything else at some point, they're going to be able to put that to the device and then bring all this data in behind it. And I just, you know, I keep thinking about this stuff and about where we are. And I just think that, hey, no matter what, every device and every app that we're using is leaving a trail. And does anybody care?
Well, in this particular case, I'm not too worried about it because I never turned my Wi-Fi on. So
okay. Because of battery?
Because of the battery life.
All right.
So in this particular, but yeah, I mean, again, it kind of comes back and we've harped on it. You know, privacy is, there is no privacy anymore. I mean, what was the quote that you guys always whip out?
Scott
on me?
McNeely, oh, privacy, yes. Get over it.
Yeah, privacy, get over it. That's it.
And that was 10, 12 years ago he said that, or maybe right. 15.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I just, it's very difficult to, participate in all of this social and mobile and technical innovation and basically be as private as we once were as a civilization or as a community. It's just not like that anymore. The same thing happened when the telegraph was strong. All of a sudden, you were connected, and being connected means sharing more about yourself or revealing more about yourself. And I just, as this progresses, we're going to know more and more, right down to eventually, you know, we're going to walk by somebody and know exactly what makes up their DNA.
It's the minority report, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at what's happening, and it's very easy to draw a straight line to this sort of Orwellian thought. But I think it's just the natural curiosity of the human race that continues to push this stuff out. It's a matter of how we use it, and that brings in a whole moral dilemma. So,
well, you know, the New York Times article about the whole AOL data search results posting. Remember, in 2006, they posted these results of their searches. For researchers to look at, and people started parsing it, and the New York Times went in and discovered number 4417749 was this woman, Thelma Arnold, in Lilburn, Georgia, 62-year-old widow, and with her permission, they released her results and asked why she'd made certain searches and so on, but that they were able to figure out who she was based on her searches, and it's because of those digital bits that we're leaving everywhere that you can do this. And I've talked to people about this and they're like, so what? Okay. Well, so what if you look up, incontinence or impotence or cancer, or, you know, you're looking up anything that somebody can then make a judgment based on what you're searching for. And, so that's one issue. The other issue is the amount of analysis that's going on is getting to be so incredibly sophisticated that now the military is using gait analysis. So the way you walk is as unique as your voice print or your fingerprint. And that you can actually, if you can identify somebody through their gait, so if it's Osama bin Laden and he walks a certain way, then when the CIA has got a satellite trained on a camp and they see somebody walking, and that's Osama bin Laden, let's take him out. And that they can do that kind of gait analysis by the way someone walks. And so, mm-hmm. The amount of data that can be mined now is just, it's stunning in its breadth. And should we care? Tim, do you care?
Yeah, to a certain degree, but, we've known that, you can be tracked for a long time. So it's not like this is new information.
Yeah, exactly.
It's getting more attention now as more and more people carry smartphones. But, this is a sort of the nature of the beast. And if something like that Project Glass vision that Google apparently is working on, those heads-up glasses with all the augmented reality displays and stuff, if that actually takes off, you're into all sorts of crazy stuff at that point.
Yeah, right.
Right? Right. I mean, you'll be constantly bombarded with probably advertising messages with proximity, people that you know are in the close proximity to you, kind of thing. So the whole notion of privacy as we've known it is changing, I think.
You know what I'm comforted by, though? Not that many Google projects take off. No. Sorry, did you see the piece in All Things D? It's like Larry Page is running out of projects to kill.
That's funny.
There's how many are left? Of course, maybe they're still launching new ones along the way here, I guess. We'll see. The glasses are certainly the hottest one lately.
Yeah, I did that. It's interesting to see. I sometimes worry, though, that we don't want innovation to die. I mean, when Google does kill a project, hopefully they can replace it with something new and continue to throw stuff against the wall to see if it sticks. I still don't think Google Plus is sticking.
I think they did stop the 20% time that they give their engineers to work on anything they want to, though. Didn't they stop that?
I don't think they did.
I don't think they've stopped it. No, but they've stopped commercializing a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, but they cut down on it or something, or they less people are given that 20% or something. But but the other thing that comforts me is that the bad guys have these tools available to them to snoop on everybody. But I like the fact that the law enforcement people are keeping up with them pretty damn well. I'm continually amazed at how I hear about how they stay on top of this stuff, and they're able to track the bad guys.
Well, it's a technology arms race,
Yeah.
And it's a geek arms race as well.
And
that's why when you go to Black Hat, half the people or more than half the people are law enforcement.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. Black Hat
in Vegas.
In Vegas. Well, and then you finally, you're starting to see more and more people protesting in their own way, like the guy that stripped naked at the Oregon airport to protest the TSA and
what the hell was that?
Yeah, I'll put links in the show notes. And there's a woman that did the same thing. And then there's also another woman who was in a wheelchair in bra and panties, and she looked like a dancer. I mean, a 40-some-year-old, fairly attractive woman, and she's sitting there waiting, and they wouldn't let her go through the special security. And it's just, so people, this stuff is coming out where people are saying, hey, enough's enough. So maybe that'll be what happens. I don't know. But
the TSA is an issue for sure.
So if Phil gets mad about his battery and takes his clothes off, just I don't want to be around.
Take off my clothes about my battery. Yeah, that's a good way to reveal myself.
Yeah. So what's coming up this in the next?
Well, Jumping ahead, speaking of big data, the analytics event on May 21st is getting a lot of attention and a lot of signups. The Mini Analytics Forum, they're doing that at Medtronic Moundsview campus, and a lot of stuff on web and social media analytics, predictive analytics, I mean, like, and big time, like enterprise kind of stuff. You know, for the retail and marketing industries and that sort of thing. And obviously they'll be talking a lot about big data. So that'll be a good one. And it's a free event underwritten by sponsors, similar to Minibar.
Mm-hmm. Good, good, good. And then we have...
MHTA is coming up here this coming week.
This coming week, yeah, on Wednesday. Still seats available for those that want to go. I think it's a couple hundred bucks for non-MHTA members.
And we're all going to be there blogging and or tweeting, right?
I'm going to be there. Yeah.
Yep. I find it interesting that the opening keynote is about your personal brand. I mean, who would have ever expected that the MHTA would be kicking off?
Yeah, good point.
Talking about your personal brand. I mean, I'm glad to see it, but
yeah,
it's a guy from Thomson Reuters, I think.
Rick King.
Their top tech guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's the. I think he's the CTO at Thomson Reuters in Eagan. Rick King. He was also the head of the Minnesota Broadband Task Force.
Oh yeah,
and he's working on the Flying Cloud Airport expansion issue, much to my chagrin. But anyway,
why would a CTO be talking about personal brand? This is interesting to me.
Yeah,
isn't it to you? I mean, I may get there on time just to hear this.
It's unusual. Yeah, I may get there on time. I may not sleep through the keynote.
Show up for this one.
I remember way back when that was known as your reputation. So yeah.
Showing up late.
Boy.
No.
You are an old dude there, Phil.
I am an old dude. So
I see what you mean. Yeah, right. Personal branding.
We used to call it reputation.
Yeah, that's all that's really what it is, you know.
Exactly. I'm not sure how that fits into the MHTA mission, but okay.
I don't quite get that either, but you know, everybody's, I guess, interested in their reputation. So it'll draw a lot of people to hear what he has to say, I guess. So, yeah.
Well, that's interesting. And then the usual, we'll put the rest of them on the post. So, but another wonderful week under our belts, and I'm going to be patiently waiting for my pebble. Maybe a Bam Bam or two.
Okay.
I think you're going to be waiting for a while. I don't think they're supposed to make them until summertime.
Yeah, September is when they are supposed to ship. So.
Yep.
Oh, well.
But you didn't comment on the Bam Bam pebble thing. Come on.
We were laughing internally.
Oh, right, right.
So come on. This is, I don't care if you're young or if you're not old enough. This is some good shit. I'm sorry.
Well, no, Flintstones is still on. So, I mean, everyone should get that.
This is funny stuff.
But not everyone watched Rocky and Bullwinkle.
You know, not everyone knows that that's basically the Honeymooners as a cartoon set in prehistoric times.
As was the Jetsons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Love it.
Yep. So, all right. Well, thanks everyone for listening.
We're interrupting Graham's breakfast.
That's right. Cheerios.
Hey, I'm trying to mute Lucky Charms. Out loud, but I'm headed down to Leif Larson's SAS class down at Coco. So yeah, that's why I got dressed early today. I hope he appreciates it.
Thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you next week on
the Innovate Gang podcast.
Take care.